A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 55. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about The Prisoner. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
What happens when a spy resigns? What happens to all of the secrets that that spy knows? How do they deal with that? These were some of the issues that The Prisoner dealt with. The Prisoner was a paranoid spy series and sci-fi series that was from the 1960s, and it was created or co-created by Patrick McGoohan, who also starred in it.
So yeah, Patrick McGoohan played The Prisoner, and he, as you say, his fingerprints are all over this series. It was very much partly his creation. And it was broadcast on ITV, which is the independent television network in the UK. And as you say, Brian, it went out in the 60s. It was broadcast over 1967 and into 1968. There were 17 episodes, which we'll be talking about. They're all about 50 minutes long. And as you say, it ostensibly starts out as a traditional spy show, but there's several other elements mixed in with that. And as we said already, there's the science fiction element, which is why we're considering it here on British Invaders. But there's a number of other elements that come up as we go along.
Yes, you get lots of sort of paranoia and conspiracy types of elements with pervasive surveillance and mysterious people controlling everything. And freedom and individuality is sort of a big part of this, too, with the idea of individual freedom versus society as a unit and everyone working together and sort of losing their individuality. So there's sort of a duality there that's very central to The Prisoner. And there are also Cold War undercurrents, as you often had in these types of series from the 60s. So you have the idea of which side are you on? And some mystery around that.
And we're going to come back to some of those elements as we go through, because they're quite important parts of this show.
Oh yes, absolutely.
But we should kick off with the story itself, which is set up fantastically for us in the title sequence of the show, which started every episode apart from the last one, I think. And in it, we see the character, an unnamed spy who will become the prisoner, as he apparently resigns from the intelligence service he works for in London, and he goes back to his house where he seems to be packing for a holiday, and he's got his passport and plans to leave the country. And then he is gassed in his house. We see a strange car pull up outside and deliver gas in through the keyhole, and he basically lapses into unconsciousness.
And that was a very strange and wonderful introduction. He ends up, from this point, waking up on a mysterious island, waking up on what is only known as the village, and he finds himself in a replica of his bedroom in a little house on this island in the village. And he is a prisoner in this village, and his name is taken away from him. He's known only as Number 6. And we never actually find out the name of the prisoner or Number 6, but we find him on this island in the village every episode dealing with it. And the village is this very strange place that seems like a sort of twisted holiday resort where everyone is told to be happy and encouraged to enjoy themselves and have lots of recreation, but they can't leave and they can't communicate with the outside.
It's very weird, isn't it, the village? Extremely strange setup. As you say, it's like a holiday resort, or it's like a retirement village, which I suppose is what it is intended to be in some ways, because we get the impression fairly early on that it's a retirement resort for former members of intelligence services, for spies, basically.
But that's something that we never really know for sure. There are a lot of things in the prisoner that we suspect, but we don't really know for sure. So we think that the idea is this is where you put people so they won't reveal their secrets. For resigned spies, maybe for others as well, we don't really know entirely for sure. And we're pretty sure that number six was a spy. But I'm not sure that it's ever really said 100%.
Right. Yes, it is sort of, it's all very vague in a way. And the other residents of the village, it's never quite clear which of them are spies, which of them are retired, and which of them are guards, or which of them are members of the sort of the whoever run the village and who are actually spying on number six and other characters. So there's quite sort of a lot of confusion about that, which is obviously deliberate.
Yes, who are the warders and who are the prisoners? There's a lot that's very vague and ambiguous, and that is part of what gives this show its power, is because there are these things that you just don't know.
Yeah.
And it helps to bring this sort of surreal quality that you have in The Prisoner, and we'll talk more about some of the things that give you that as we go.
And as you say, I mean, number six himself will often have quite guarded conversations with other residents of the village because he's not sure if they are prisoners themselves or if they are a guard, as you say. I think one character where it is much more clear, though, is the character of number two. And the character referred to by the number two seems to be the sort of like superior person in the village. He's the chief warder, in effect. And the character of number two is always trying to get information from our hero, number six, the prisoner himself. And the sort of information that they're trying to get from him is pretty much as you said in your introduction, Brian. Why did he resign? What does he know? And it's sort of hinted that who was he going to tell? Who was he going to pass information on to, if anybody? And there's this continual battle to try and find this information out from number six, which forms a sort of large part of the show.
And that's another part of the setup in this fantastic intro that we get in most of the episodes. It's not just the final episodes. There are a couple episodes where you don't have the intro there, but most of them have it. And you have the question of why do you resign is in there, and it sets up the battle of wits, the debate between number two and number six. And number six is always the same character. It's Patrick McGoohan playing number six in every episode. But number two is played by a different actor in each episode. The impression that I had, and again, this is something that's rather vague, is that every time at the end of each episode, number two was unsuccessful, number six is not broken, and they don't get this information from number six, and so on. So they're always firing or reassigning number two and bringing a new number two almost every episode to try to break number six. And one of the most identifiable versions of number two was played by Leo McKern. And he was very good. He showed up in a total of three episodes, one episode during the series and then the last couple episodes of the series. And that brought a sort of ongoing, very high-strung battle of wits, very tense between number six and number two. And that was played out in a different way with each version of number two.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, as you say, they keep changing the actor who plays number two. And as you say, Brian, we get this impression that the person is being replaced because they failed in their task of breaking down number six and finding out what he knows. And although a couple of the actors came back on a couple of occasions to reprise their roles as number two, there were still 17 different actors who would take on the role of number two over the course of the series. Perhaps, as you say, Leo McKern is the one that stands out the most because he actually comes back in three episodes. But there were some other quite notable actors who played number two. Peter Wingard, a very sort of recognisable actor from British television in the 60s, quite well known for a long-running series called Department S. But he also turned up in shows like The Avengers, and he played the character of Clytus in the film Flash Gordon. And also a chap called Darren Nesbitt, another British Invaders actor, because he's been in Doctor Who, he's been in UFO when we discussed that series, and more recently he's been appearing in some of the Big Finish audio dramas for Doctor Who as well. But lots of different actors turned up throughout the show playing Number Two.
Yeah, one of the few female Number Two characters was played by Mary Morris, and we talked about her in A for Andromeda, and she is always entertaining to watch, so this was quite fun to see Mary Morris in this.
She's fantastic. You know, she's this sort of like small, slight, puckish looking figure who clearly, you know, sort of radiates this intelligence. And her psychological battle with Number Six is a pretty good episode. So, yeah, as you say, we quite like Mary Morris whenever she turns up on British Invaders, and she's very, very watchable again here. There aren't many more recurring characters in The Prisoner. One sort of character that we have to mention is the village itself. This strange place, which appears to be on an island, it's referred to only as the village. It was played, as it were, in the series by a place called Port Merion in Wales. It looks, as we've said, like a holiday resort or a retirement village. And it's very strange. It's a character in its own right. It's filled with brightly costumed people. There's games going on. There's ornamental gardens and tea rooms. There's little electric golf buggies whizzing around, carrying people backwards and forwards. And as I say, in a sense, just one of the recurring characters in the show.
Yes, there are a lot of strange things in the village. You have a lot of things. And there are some sci-fi elements there, too, because you end up with things where someone will say, oh, I think I should go for a walk now. And all of a sudden, the door behind him opens so he can go out for his walk. And you have these little things that just sort of happen. And, you know, you get into the ideas where there is this sort of pervasive surveillance in the village. And all these sort of odd things, they have this type of almost forced recreation where people are playing various games and things, and the brightly colored clothing. It's this kind of idea that you have a place that is sort of forcing itself and forcing people to be sort of bright and cheerful, when it becomes pretty clear to us that this is not a bright and cheerful place. There is a lot going on here that is not good.
That's actually quite interesting, isn't it? Because as you say, it looks bright and cheerful, and yet the stuff that's going on behind the scenes is quite dark and sinister. That's an interesting contrast.
Yes. Now, there are a couple of other characters that appear in most of the episodes. One is the butler, played by Angelo Muscat, who is always waiting on Number Two, the new Number Two. And Angelo Muscat is about 4'3", I think. You know, he's a little guy. And he's, you know, fully decked out in a tux with tails. So, you know, the fancy butler outfit. And he never speaks. So you have this sort of very well-dressed, very small butler character, you know, midget butler character, walking around and quietly helping out. And he sort of seems to represent the little people, if you will. He's kind of the everyman who's always there behind the scenes. And he's used in interesting ways, and the actor Angelo Muscat brings things off pretty well. You also have the supervisor or the coordinator who is in the control room, working the machinery, working the systems for all of this surveillance and all of the things they do. And he was played by Peter Swanwick. So he comes up quite a bit, and those characters sort of give you a bit of that thread of continuity. Because apart from them, you have very little continuity through the series apart from number six, and the village itself.
Yeah, that's right. We get quite a lot of guest stars on The Prisoner. Basically, guest stars cropping up to play number two or to play other apparent inmates on the island who may or may not be prisoners or something more than that. And sometimes the part of the episode is number six trying to figure out exactly who they are and what they know.
That's right.
Where am I? In the village. What do you want? Information. Whose side are you on? That would be telling. We want information.
Information. Information.
You won't get it. By hook or by crook, we will. Who are you? The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
As we've said, the big part of the show is the battle between number two and number six, because number two wants the information that number six apparently has. And each number two has their own tactics as to how they're going to get that information from number six. And so they will cajole him and they will interrogate him and they will attempt to trick him, all really trying to sort of get this information out of number six's head.
And they will go to some very strange extents, and this brings in some of these science fiction elements. You have hypnosis and drugs being used and brainwashing. You have things where they're going and almost entering his thoughts and doing memory alteration and some very odd and strange different things happening here. And that's one of the interesting things you have in The Prisoner, is what will the new number two come up with this time to stop number six, to interrogate number six, to get this information, and to get all of his information, who knows what. And number six, of course, always fights back against this, and he does his own manipulation and his own dealing with number two and with everyone else. That becomes very key to the program, that you have number six and number two playing this psychological game, this battle between them.
That's right. You've got the cat and mouse between six and two the whole time. And as you say, they've also got these sort of very, very 60s elements that we've talked about before, sort of like mind control, and also these sort of like quite weird psychedelic sequences where number six is drugged or brainwashed and so on. Stuff that's come up in other 60s television shows, but really sort of plays out in a major, major part of The Prisoner.
That's right. The key elements of the Prisoner, of what actually happens, are probably... one is these games and sort of psychological battles and all these kinds of things that go on, number two versus number six. And the other thing would be the escape attempts by number six, which are quite frequent, especially in certain parts of the series, and how those escape attempts are ultimately foiled.
Yeah, because again, it's not clear, but we do get this impression that if there are other retired spies in the village, that mostly they appear to have accepted their lot and appear resigned to it, whereas number six quite definitely does not accept it, and he fights back. So he battles both against number two, but also, as you say, he tries to escape the whole time. And in some of the episodes, that will give us the odd clue as to where the island may be in the world. But I think, as you've noted before, Brian, some of those clues do contradict themselves. So the location of the island is a bit uncertain, or in fact, very uncertain.
Very often in The Prisoner, you will find something out about the location of the village or why things are being done, more information about the situation. And by the end of the episode, you find out that that information is questionable.
Yeah.
that it seems to be most likely false.
Absolutely. I mean, I was, and I'm sure I'm not the only one to have thought this, when I have been watching the television show Lost about another mysterious island where information that we learn is apparently contradicted or proved to be wrong towards the end of an episode or in a subsequent episode, I was reminded of The Prisoner. There are some similarities between The Prisoner and Lost.
Yes, The Prisoner was tremendously influential, and we won't get into too much of the things that were influenced by The Prisoner because there are just so many of them and it's such a complex topic, but it certainly had a great influence on a lot of things in society and pop culture.
So as well as having quite influential themes and having these big 60s themes of conspiracy and mind control and paranoia, it's also, The Prisoner has a very distinctive look and sound. And we'll get through some of those features now. I mean, I've mentioned Port Mirion in North Wales, which actually is a hotel in a village in North Wales. And it was designed by an architect called Sir Bertram Clough William Ellis, which is a fantastic name for a fantastic village, which apparently he modelled on an Italian village, I'm told. So it has these very distinctive white buildings. And as we say, it's got lots of staircases and ornamental gardens. So it looks quite distinctive. It doesn't look like a typical United Kingdom village. It does look very strange.
It has lots of things on odd angles as well. Things are not sort of lined up nicely.
No, exactly. It's all, it's not neat little streets. It's all, as you say, odd angles and odd juxtapositions of buildings and landscape.
And we talk now about this hotel resort, Port Mirion, but in the original broadcast of The Prisoner, it was not credited or announced that that's where this was filmed until the last episode. It was deliberately kept secret until the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, now everybody knows this place in Wales because of The Prisoner, and it subsequently was used in some other television shows. Notably, it was in Doctor Who in the 70s, and I know that the various music videos have been filmed there and so on. But at the time, I don't think anybody had seen anything like it. So, you know, it was quite bizarre to see it on the television in the 1960s for people who didn't know about this place.
It was a very good choice.
And then in the village, we've got all these brightly coloured people wearing the very distinctive clothing of the village. They seem to go in for boating blazers and boating shoes and academic scarves, which is a particular feature of number two, who seems to wear a striped scarf around his neck. And the people going through the village wearing their brightly coloured capes and carrying multicoloured umbrellas and wearing strangely striped T-shirts, almost like fishermen's T-shirts. So it's a real sort of like distinctive look to the residents of the village, which gives it this strange sort of holiday resort feel.
It is odd, and I keep coming back to this word surreal, but it helps give it that very strange aspect to the look and the feel of the village.
And they talk, they have a slightly strange speech pattern in the village, and in particular they use a couple of phrases, and one of the sort of big key phrases of The Prisoner is their sort of parting gesture or parting saying, which is when they all say to somebody, "Be seeing you." And that's one of the real catchphrases from this television show, which is repeated through most episodes. As characters part, they will say, "Be seeing you."
And there's like a salute that accompanies that with a raised hand with thumb and forefinger touching.
Yes, almost posed over the eye as if they are actually literally will be seeing the person through some form of lens, which obviously has more than one meaning.
Yes. They also had this logo for the village that was the penny farthing bicycle. This is the very old style of bicycle that has a very large front wheel and a very small back wheel. And everyone wears a badge with the penny farthing bicycle on it and the number. So everyone you see is always wearing a number and a picture of a penny farthing bicycle on this badge, and that's sort of a feature of what you see there. And you also have this underground control room that's sort of a constant feature of things, where number two and the supervisor we mentioned and others will be there behind the scenes controlling things and doing all of this surveillance.
Do you play chess, sir?
Yes.
Come and join us.
I'm the queen. Come and be the queen's pawn.
Who's he?
I can answer that as we play.
On to King's Four.
So, as we probably suggested, everybody on the village has got a number. There are no names in the village. Everybody is referred to as a number, which is another one of the strange elements. And, you know, an obvious sign that things are not quite as bright and cheerful as they appear. There's a couple of other notable design features. There's a very strange device for controlling the inmates of the village and certainly for stopping any escapes. And this is this very large white balloon thing called the Rover, which will track down anybody who tries to escape and will subdue them almost by suffocating them. And I gather that they intended to have some strange robot or mechanical device as the sort of security feature, but it was proving too difficult to make it actually work. And I think they had an opportune bit of good fortune when they saw a weather balloon and decided to use that. And I guess what they were doing often was actually filming this balloon and then reversing the film in order to get the balloon to do what it wanted in the show. But again, it's this very sort of strange, sinister device that will pursue the prisoner down a beach as he attempts to escape from the village.
It is quite a freaky kind of image of this balloon-type bubble looking in this, you know, moving in strange ways and basically smothering people and blocking people's way with the threat of smothering people. And you see it come up out of the water sometimes and stop people who are trying to leave by sea and so on. And they actually took this simple image and made it quite imposing.
Yeah, it's very strange. If you haven't seen The Prisoner and you haven't seen the Rover device, you might think it sounds a bit sort of daft, really, this sort of weather balloon bouncing along the beach. But actually, the way they did it made it quite threatening. And as you say, Brian, the scenes where it's pressing over people's faces and suffocating them are quite disturbing, actually.
It also gave you this idea that the people running the village had very sophisticated capabilities. They had these things that had no visible mechanism and that we just couldn't understand. They could do their bidding.
Yeah. We also see right at the very start in the title sequence, we see Number Six's car that he drives in London, which again was very distinctive. It was a Lotus 7, which was a kit car, like a very small sports car, almost like an old-fashioned racing car. And he drives that in the opening sequences before he is captured and taken to the island or to the village. So another, you know, distinctive part of the look of The Prisoner, and one of the things that many people remember is the car.
Yes, the car was in the opening sequence and it was never in the village, but you do see it show up in a number of different episodes in different situations. There were a lot of very stylized, real 1960s design elements. You had sort of futuristic looking phones and chairs and light fittings that are dated, but have this very stylized look that I think holds up pretty well.
As you say, it holds up well, and it still looks very good. And if we compare it with something like UFO, which we talked about before, where some of the 60s and 70s design features don't hold up quite so well, I think here they still look very impressive.
Yes, there are a few design type elements that are similar to what was done in UFO, with sort of the futuristic telephones and things like that. Yeah, it has quite an interesting look to it. It's unlike almost anything else I've seen, which is pretty good. You also have a lot of these brainwashing sequences and drug-related sequences or things with machines being hooked up to people's heads and things like this that are these very surreal kinds of things, but give you that sort of late 1960s drug-related and paranoia-related things that do work very well.
And then to top it off, we've got some fantastic title music written by Ron Grainer, who quite famously composed the Doctor Who theme, although, as we know, the Doctor Who theme was then adapted quite considerably by the Radiophonic Workshop. But he also wrote the theme music here, and it plays over the famous opening sequence of Number 6 in his car and his resignation, and then him waking up on the island, and as you say, the sort of voiceovers between Number 6 and Number 2 as they try to find out what each other, you know, wants, and Number 2 demands information. So the opening sequence, and in fact the closing sequence with the logo of the Penny Farthing bicycle slowly building on the screen, are again sort of like iconic moments from this 60s show. And if you haven't seen them, or if you haven't watched The Prisoner for a long time, this is certainly, I think, pop along to YouTube and watch the title sequence, because it is a fantastic piece of work, as we find so often on these British Invaders shows, that the titles really bring the glories of these shows back to us.
Yes, the opening sequence for The Prisoner is very, very good. I really like it. And what I don't think we mentioned about that sequence is that it includes this conversation between Number 6 and Number 2 that is the setup for the idea of these types of confrontations between 6 and 2. And that conversation is voiced by the Number 2 in that episode. So it's always Number 6 and Number 2, but each time you see the opening sequence, there is a different Number 2 in it, and you see the picture of the new Number 2, and you hear the voiceover with the Number 2. So you get the same conversation, always with Patrick McGoohan as Number 6, but with all of these different actors for Number 2. And there are a couple of episodes where they abbreviate it so you don't see or hear Number 2 in it, but most of the time you get that conversation with a different Number 2 each time.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, that will wrap up our discussion from this first part of talking about The Prisoner. Please come back and join us in our next episode, when we'll be talking a bit more about the production of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about Patrick McGoohan and his role as the creator of the show. We're going to go into some more of these themes and start to talk about some of the episodes that we particularly liked, which ones to watch, and if possible, which order to watch them in.
Yes, there's definitely a lot more to say about The Prisoner than what we've covered this time. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yep, thank you very much. Catch us next time, and until then, this is Eamon from England saying, be seeing you.